The MLB offseason plot thickens as we begin to see which teams are pushing for contention and which teams are rebuilding. I'm Bensie Gisser, and this is World of Baseball. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 55 of the World of Baseball podcast. I am very excited for this episode. A lot of things went down in the MLB, and we're going to jump right into that stuff. But before I jump into that, we're going to talk quickly about two things. One, great guest coming on the podcast in the next couple weeks. Stay tuned for that. I know I've been saying that for a couple weeks, and we did have some great guests this offseason, and we'll continue to have some great guests coming up in the future. So stay tuned to that. There's going to be a very interesting guest coming up, and I think you guys will all enjoy that very much. The second thing that I will talk about here quickly is the Twitter. The Twitter has 25 followers from like 465 that we had a couple months ago before the podcast Twitter got hacked. The hack was out of my control. The hack was not my fault. I would like the World of Baseball Nation to go and refollow the World of Baseball podcast Twitter. Do your part in supporting the World of Baseball podcast by following that Twitter. You will see all the opinions as I have them in real time. It's just a great thing. It's a great idea. You should follow the World of Baseball podcast Twitter if you do not already. Let's jump right into it. We're going to be talking some off-season trades, some off-season acquisitions, starting from Liam Hendricks to the Chicago White Sox. Let's talk about it. This is arguably one of the best relievers in the league. Some say he is the best reliever in the league, and he's going to a team that could very possibly finish at the top of the American League next year. This adds on to an already strong bullpen on a very young team that pitches well and that hits very well. I don't think the Chicago White Sox are done yet, but I think this move alone puts them in World Series contention. You look at the offense that this team has, and you couple that with a strong starting rotation and a strong bullpen, and they just have everything. They're young, and they're extremely competitive. I don't see this team going anywhere anytime soon, and I think Liam Hendricks' leadership, his veteran leadership, and his amazing abilities in the back end of the bullpen will really anchor this team down. That will win them a lot more games than they won last year, and in a full season, you can really see this team spread out, and yes, they do have down spots and high spots, but this team is going to be fantastic, and Liam Hendricks absolutely adds to that. I think this is a fantastic signing by the Chicago White Sox. A great, great signing. Moving on to the second signing, I would like to talk about two things by the New York Yankees. The Yankees bring back DJ LeMahieu. We heard they were far apart, and then all of a sudden they made a deal. This is a good deal for the Yankees. It was absolutely necessary for them. They've had a relatively disappointing offseason so far, besides the move that they made recently, which I'm a big fan of. We'll get to that soon. And LeMahieu is one of the league's best. He's defensively versatile. He's a Gold Glove winner at second base. He can play second, short, third, first. He can play everywhere on the infield. I wouldn't be surprised if you stuck him in the outfield. He'd be able to play it too. He's a great hitter, especially a great contact hitter. He's an MLB top 10 guy. He's a top 10 player in the MLB who frequently goes under the radar. This is a great signing for the Yankees and a necessary signing for the Yankees if they want to at least show the world that they're still trying to compete. They have been very quiet up until recently, and even the move they made recently was a good move, yet it wasn't the biggest move they could have made, and I hope for the Yankees' sake that they make some bigger moves in the future. LeMahieu was an important move, and they got their guy back. Very important move by the Yankees, and they signed one of my favorite players, so DJ LeMahieu, best of luck to him. He's hit well in New York. I don't see that stopping anytime soon. As one of the best hitters in the league, I would expect him to continue his upward trajectory as one of the top hitters in the league, and the Yankees secured him critically. Very important for them. The Yankees also signed one of my favorite pitchers of all time, arguably my favorite pitcher of all time, Corey Kluber, a former Cy Young winner, to a one-year, $11 million deal. I love this move. I talked about it in multiple episodes previous why I love this move. I think this move is brilliant, meaning you're getting a guy who's won multiple Cy Young awards. You're getting a guy who's one of the best pitchers in recent MLB history, and you're getting him at a pretty low premium. You're getting him at a pretty good deal. Yes, it is true that he hasn't been healthy for the last 2 years, but when he's healthy, there's nothing to say that he can't perform. We haven't seen him have a bad year from a non-health standpoint. We haven't seen him pitch a healthy season and it be bad yet. I don't think there's a reason to say that Kluber can't do it again. Do I think he'll return to his Cy Young form? No, but if he's healthy, he's a great guy to have, both from a leadership standpoint and from a pitching standpoint. You get a 2-for-1 right there with the veteran leadership in Kluber, who is one of the Indians' main guys who they brought out. He's one of the first guys that the Indians brought out that showed, wow, this team's pitching development is really great. He can help develop a Yankees pitching staff that has not been fantastic over the last couple years and is a pitching staff that could use that help. He adds to their rotation. He's a pretty solid acquisition. He'll slot into the 4 or 5 spot, and he'll be a leader. This is just a fantastic move by the New York Yankees. I don't see anything wrong with this move. This is just a great move, bringing in Corey Kluber. A lot of teams had him on their radar, and they were the one that secured him. And Corey Kluber, best of luck to you in New York if you're listening to the show. Even if you're not, best of luck to Corey Kluber. I think it's going to be a great move by the New York Yankees. Moving right along, the San Diego Padres were back in business, acquiring starting pitcher Joe Musgrove from the Pirates in exchange for outfield prospect Hudson Head, San Diego's number 7 prospect, pitcher Omar Cruz, San Diego's number 17 prospect, relief pitcher David Bednar, starting pitcher Drake Fellows, outfielder Andy Rodriguez from the New York Mets, he's the number 14, while the Mets acquired Joey Lucchesi from the Padres in a 3-team deal. Musgrove is the Padres' 5-starter. That's one reel their pitching staff is. When Clevinger returns next year, Musgrove's not going to be in this starting rotation. The Pirates got exactly what they needed to get here. This is the classic Pittsburgh Pirates trade. We'll see another of them coming up soon. If you listen to my last episode, we had a couple of them in that episode too, with the trade of Josh Bell and things like that. This is exactly what they need to do. There's a couple of interesting prospects they get. One of them being Hudson Head. He is only 19 years old. He's got tremendous upside, though. He's a third-round draft pick. He netted I believe he got a $3 million signing bonus. He was an interesting player to watch. I think he kind of fell in the draft. I think he was higher ranked than that. He's a San Diego number 7 in a very stacked farm system, which is interesting to see. And they have guys who are major league ready in this trade, too, like David Bednar. He's major league ready. And you have guys like Drake Fellows, who hasn't pitched yet. This trade helps the Pirates on many different levels of their farm system while giving the Padres a solid, strong fifth spot starter for this World Series run that they're inevitably going to make this year. They'll definitely be competing for the division. They'll be competing for the World Series. This is not a year for the Padres where they're competing for the division. This is a year where they're competing for the World Series, and I believe they made that obvious with their offseason acquisitions. I believe they've done a fantastic job this offseason in getting players that they needed to get, getting players that were important, getting players that were important to help them succeed. And yes, they've given up a lot of prospects in the process. They gave up their catcher, Joey Lucchesi, who will be the backup catcher for the New York Mets, I believe, behind Brian McCann, retired, I believe. James McCann will start for the Mets. Joey Lucchesi will be behind him at the plate. This being said, this was a fantastic deal for the San Diego Padres. I believe giving up the prospects is worth it if they shore up that rotation and they get a strong pitcher in Joe Musgrove who will help them out. And we all know, as I will mention later, Pirates pitchers do not do well in Pittsburgh, but when they leave, they do very well. See Charlie Morton, see Tyler Glasnow, see Garrett Cole, and probably Joe Musgrove too. I guess we will see about that. Moving right along to the next guy who we will talk about, which is the Washington Nationals. They acquire veteran pitcher John Lester to a 1-year, $5 million deal. Normally, this is a deal that I wouldn't really touch upon. This isn't a humongous deal. This is John Lester. This is another potential high-reward signing by the Nationals. The Nationals have made a couple of risky trades and risky signings like this. John Lester is definitely not who he was, but like the Kluber deal, it brings in a leader and a back-end piece of the rotation. This is what the Nationals kind of need. The strongest part of their rotation is the front end of that rotation. It's a brilliant rotation. You're looking at Max Scherzer. You're looking at Steven Strasburg. You're looking at Patrick Corbin. This rotation is very strong, as is. And what they do here is they bring in a strong back-end piece to their rotation, someone who's a leader and someone who can help them out potentially. And if he can return a little bit to his old form, and this is a huge signing for them. This is a critical signing for them. This is a really, really important signing for them. They also brought back Ryan Zimmerman on a 1-year deal. That's just more of a sentimental thing. Ryan Zimmerman, the apex Washington National player, I think it's going to be great to see him back. I don't think he'll play that much with Josh Bell being the primary first baseman. We'll see what happens. But I think this is a good signing for the Washington Nationals. Worst comes to worst, he doesn't pitch very well. They're only paying him $5 million, and he leads. He leads from the bench. That's not a bad situation at all to be in if you're the Washington Nationals. They made another signing that was more important. I'll get to that one later as well. The Nationals looking a little bit stronger by a little bit stronger each and every move they make. They're not going to compete for the top of the division. They are maybe trying to edge the Mets out for that wild card spot. If the Mets don't do anything soon, it might be possible. I guess we'll just see. Moving right along to the next thing we are going to talk about, and this is the title of the episode. We're going to talk about the Toronto Blue Jays. The Toronto Blue Jays acquire relief pitcher Kirby Yates, relief pitcher Tyler Chatwood, and outfielder George Springer on the market in a 2-day span. They acquired another person who I will talk about later as well, but this is solid. The relievers are good competitive signings. They're solid signings. They made these good relief pitcher signings that are going to help the back end of their bullpen and take pressure off their young starting rotation. You're going to have Nate Pearson starting for this team this year. They're not going to want to put a ton of pressure on him, and putting solid relievers behind him, especially a former starter like Tyler Chatwood, takes a lot of pressure off those guys at the front end of their rotation to compete. That's an important signing for them. In regards to the Springer deal, that's a huge deal. The Toronto offense is legitimately stacked, and it's scary. If their young guys continue the way they've been playing, it's going to be unreal. They'll have a legitimate shot at this division. look at their lineup as it is. You've got Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you've got Bo Bichette, you've got Kevin Biggio, you've got George Springer now sitting in this lineup. It's just like a strong lineup through and through. No matter where you go, it's just going to be hard to pitch this Toronto Blue Jays lineup. And think about that. Austin Martin coming up from the minor leagues. Maybe not this year, but in the next 2 years. They have George Springer on, I believe, a 5-year deal. This is a gigantic deal for George Springer. He's going to be playing on a team that's going to be very competitive in the AL East for a long, long time. The Blue Jays are a team to watch. And this is what the Blue Jays have been doing. They're slowly building players into their core. This is what I like to see. I'm not a big fan of teams, and you see this a lot in the NBA, but you kind of see it in the MLB too, where a team will build up a strong core of prospects and then change and then trade them away for big league players who are ready to go, and they don't win a World Series because of it. They just get good. They don't let their prospects develop. The Blue Jays, what they are doing is letting their prospects develop into the stars they're supposed to be, while at the same time acquiring pieces around them, which is a huge thing, which is a very smart move on behalf of the Toronto Blue Jays, and we'll see how they play this year. Will they win the division? The division's pretty strong. You're looking at the Tampa Bay Rays. Yes, they've lost two of their three main starting pitchers, but they are still a very good team with a very good farm system, the number one farm system in the league, and there are guys coming up. I would not sleep on the Rays. I think they'll win the division again this year. We'll talk about predictions in an episode down the line, I'm sure. I think they'll win the division. In terms of the Yankees, they can either finish second or third. I believe the Blue Jays will make it competitive. Also, the Blue Jays did get another guy who I will talk about later, and this will further prove my point as to what the Toronto Blue Jays are doing. The Houston Astros brought back veteran Michael Brantley. Why wouldn't they? He's hitting. He's a pleasure in the clubhouse, and they need him. There's no reason for them not to bring in a veteran like Michael Brantley, who's still been hitting the baseball fantastically well. He's still a solid ball player. He's done great things in Houston, and they brought him back. Rightfully so. There was a lot of debate, actually. Everyone was like, oh, he's going to Toronto. Obviously, he's going to Toronto. And then someone leaked it that he was going to Toronto. We've seen this a couple of times. We saw Brad Hand do this to the Mets, too. And Hand obviously didn't sign with the Mets. We saw this happen to Brantley. He was going to Toronto. It's ridiculous. I don't know what's happening with the false media around the MLB. False media is all over the place nowadays. Who knows what's true? But here, just like odd, very odd around the MLB. I don't really know what to say about it. We just saw Brantley, like, oh, he's going to Toronto. Everyone's like, oh, wow, Toronto's getting Springer and Brantley. They're just basically sapping the Houston Astros. And then the Astros decide to bring back Brantley. I don't even know if they were even discussing bringing Brantley to Toronto. It's just so weird how it happened. Also, just like a side point on this before I move on, the Toronto Blue Jays robbed the Mets with Springer. Springer was the best guy that the Mets could have taken. And obviously, Steve Cohen's got a lot more on his plate with the stock market right now than he does with the New York Mets, and he can wait it out. But center fielders are dropping like flies on this free agency market. We saw David Dahl, who I thought the Mets should sign out of the get-go, be taken by the Texas Rangers. They signed him to a 1-year deal. Now we see Springer off the board too. And then we see Eddie Rosario, who's another solid outfield piece, go to the Indians. We'll talk about that later. And now who's left? Who's left for them? Yes, they could obviously trade for someone, and that could be the most likely possibility at this point. Or they can go and get Jackie Bradley Jr., who's a great defensive outfielder, but he doesn't solve offense. He doesn't solve that offensive side, so they're probably not going to start him as much. They need a long-term center fielder, and they did not get that, which is very interesting to see. I thought the Mets were going to be extremely aggressive with Springer and get him. Mets fans should be slightly disappointed with this offseason. Yes, they got Lindor. Yes, I'm aware that was a good trade. But at the same time, considering the Mets thought they were going to get every single person they thought they were going to get, I mean, it hasn't been a terrible offseason for the New York Mets. It's been solider than any of their other offseasons they've had recently. They traded Jared Kelnick 2 offseasons ago. I mean, anything's better than that. One of the worst trades in baseball history. It's been solid for the Mets. That being said, it could be better, and the Mets really have to step it off if they really want to take this division from the Braves, which they have made an indication that they want to do. We will see what happens. Moving right along, Red Sox sign Enrique, also known as Kike Hernandez, the second baseman slash third baseman slash shortstop slash utility guy. He's been all over the place. He fills a spot. He makes good cash. I believe it's $14 million over 2 years. He's a good, versatile guy. They also required reliever Garrett Richards to help them out. The Boston Red Sox are not a team competing right now. If anyone says they're a team competing, just look at what they've done. They have not done anything to prove competitive. They traded Mookie Betts. None of their starting pitchers are who they were. It's just a very different Boston Red Sox team than the team that won the World Series in 2018. Enrique Hernandez fills this team well. He's a guy who can lead. He's a very versatile player, so if they have a prospect coming up in one situation, they can move him to another spot, and he can play there. He's played the outfield, too. I believe he made an error in the outfield. He was the one who dropped. No, that was Chris Taylor. Never mind. It was not Kike Hernandez who made the error in center field. in game two against the Tampa Bay Rays. That was not him. That was Chris Taylor in center field. He's very versatile. It's going to be interesting to watch what they do with Kike Hernandez. I think he'll fit in well in Boston. I don't think he's trying to win with this move, obviously. If he was trying to win, he would have done whatever he could to stay with the Los Angeles Dodgers, because this Boston Red Sox team does not look like they are that team primed and ready to go. Moving right along to the next trade we are going to talk about. This is the biggest trade by the Yankees this year. This is the best move this year by far. Pirates trade Jameson Taillon, their starting ace, to the New York Yankees for starting pitcher Miguel Yajuar, Wesley Contreras, shortstop Michael Escato, outfielder Kanan Smith. Another classic Pittsburgh Pirates trade right here. These all guys were all prospects who the Pittsburgh Pirates got. The Yankees may get crazy upside from this. As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, and I'll mention again, we know what happens to Pittsburgh Pirates pitchers when they leave Pittsburgh. Every time a Pirates pitcher leaves, they start dominating. Tyler Glasnow was a good prospect. He is an ace now in Tampa Bay because he left Pittsburgh. Gerrit Cole was a good pitcher. In fact, he had the worst season of his career before going to Houston, all of a sudden being the best pitcher in the league. Charlie Morton was a decent pitcher in Pittsburgh. All of a sudden, what happens? He leaves and he's an all-star a couple years later. Take a look at this. You've seen it across the board. And what happens in the reverse way? Chris Archer gets traded to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Everyone's like, oh yeah, Chris Archer. If you remember, Chris Archer was one of the best pitchers in the league. He was definitely regarded as one of the best pitchers in the league, and he came over to the Pittsburgh Pirates, and he sucked, and he's irrelevant now, and no one thinks anything. When you say Chris Archer, you're like, oh yeah, Chris Archer. He was once a good pitcher, and now he's kind of irrelevant sitting around in Pittsburgh. I honestly don't even know where Chris Archer is playing right now. I expect Joe Musgrove, who got traded to the Padres, I discussed that earlier, to be exactly like this. I'm waiting for him to have a good year, too. I would not be surprised if he does. Stay tuned for that. The New York Yankees have added to their rotation. They're looking good. They're looking strong. We will see what happens with them this year. If this rotation is strong enough to hold them up, then it changes a whole lot because their offense is good. If their offense can stay healthy, which they really can't, and that's something, a complaint I have about the New York Yankees, just like they got to change their training squad or something. Their training staff is just horrible. Their guys get injured left and right. It might be because they're huge giants that work out all the time, or it could be because they're not being trained well or being overworked. I have no idea what it is, but the Yankees guys always get injured. I've definitely mentioned this on previous episodes of the podcast. That being said, if this trade works out for the Yankees, if Jameson Taillon is able to return to a higher form than he was in Pittsburgh, even if he stays the way he was in Pittsburgh, this is a great trade for the New York Yankees. Best move of the offseason so far, besides bringing back DJ LeMahieu. Moving right along to the next thing I would like to talk about, Brad Hand to the Washington Nationals. I am not so high on Brad Hand, honestly. If people were to ask me, is he the best reliever in the league, I would say no. He did lead the league in saves last year, but I've seen him blow a lot of critical situations as a Tribe fan. His stats look really good, and he is a good pitcher, but I've seen him lose a lot of games, and I've seen him struggle a lot. In fact, I believe in 2018, he had this dead arm thing where he just legitimately couldn't pitch. Or it was the second half of 2019, I believe. He just could not pitch in the second half of the season. It was very odd to see, and this is a good signing by the Washington Nationals. He's a good pitcher. Don't get me wrong. He's a very solid pitcher. He's one of the best relievers in the league, but I'm not as high on him as other people are. This is the biggest move by the Washington Nationals this offseason. This is the best move by the Washington Nationals this offseason. They will still need more if they want to be legitimately competitive in that division and compete for a World Series, definitely with juggernauts in the NL like the Pirates and the like the Dodgers and the Padres. They will have to make more better high-quality signings like this. They'll probably have to make a couple big trades too, and time is running out, but this definitely makes them a lot better, and this maybe, just maybe, pushes them into the same conversation as the New York Mets for second place in that division, maybe even more. And moving right along from that, we are back to the Toronto Blue Jays. They shore up their infield with a high-risk, high-reward signing in Marcus Semien. In 2019, Marcus Semien was the best shortstop in the league, arguably. He had one of the highest, he was just fantastic. I believe he finished third in MVP voting. It was fantastic. 2020 was not good. If Marcus Semien can return to his form in 2019, which he had never done previously, by the way, it could be a one-year wonder situation, or it could be something that he can build consistency off of. If he can do that with the Toronto Blue Jays, they even have a higher chance of winning the division. George Springer is a huge signing. Kirby Yates and Tyler Chatwood are great signings for the Toronto Blue Jays. This being said, Marcus Semien returning to 2019 form could be huge. This is the Toronto Blue Jay way. Get guys in spots that they need instead of just trading prospects for guys, getting a guy who doesn't really hurt them, but definitely could possibly help them. And this is a good signing for them. I'm a big fan of this signing. I said I had him relatively high up on my free agents list when we came into the offseason, not knowing where anyone would go. I believe we did it with Foolish Bailey from Foolish Baseball. I'm not sure if it was that episode where we discussed it, but I was high on Marcus Semien then, and I am now, and I believe he'll maybe return back to that form. Maybe a new setting will definitely help him out. Definitely a different market than Oakland is for him. We will see what happens, and if it does happen well for the Toronto Blue Jays, it is big, and it is really, really big for them, and they should be a team that needs to be watched. Moving right along, the Cleveland Indians made a couple signings as of recent. They signed back Cesar Hernandez to another year. He's a good signing, but it didn't really make sense to me, and it still might not make sense to me unless a trade goes down. Let me explain. The Indians have one of the best middle infield farm systems in the league. They have guys that are very close to the major leagues, like Yu Chang, and they have guys who are farther off, like Brian Rocchio, who are all solid prospects. They have guys on every level of the minor leagues that are solid shortstops. They traded them for Clevinger. Gabriel Arias, he's a solid shortstop. They draft shortstops like Carson Tucker left and right. They draft and they get Gabriel Rodriguez and international signing money and everything like that. They put themselves in a situation where they have a very strong shortstop game. This being said, one of those guys has to come to the major league soon, and signing Cesar Hernandez to a middle infield position, even though they don't really need him, seems odd to me. The only way this would make sense is if the rumors about Ahmed Rosario getting traded are true. If they do end up trading Ahmed Rosario, then they could put Cesar Hernandez at second, put Andres Jimenez at short, who they got in the Lindor trade, and then they have their infield for the year. It's only a one-year deal. It doesn't really hurt them much. I like Cesar Hernandez. He's a gold glove second baseman. He led the league and the American League in doubles last year. He's a solid ball player, but this signing doesn't make sense unless they get rid of Ahmed Rosario. There's no reason to back up the team with like 30 major league ready decent infielders when you have crazy guys in the farm system coming up and they need playing time. There's no reason in stifling Yu Chang for Ahmed Rosario right now unless they trade him or getting Cesar Hernandez back, if they're not going to let guys from their own farm system who they have heralded throughout the years they're not going to let them into the big leagues. It doesn't make sense to me, but it could possibly make sense. I don't hate this signing. I really don't. I like Cesar Hernandez. I'm questioning it a little bit. We'll see what happens. I believe they'll trade Ahmed Rosario, and that would make a lot more sense. Moving right along to one of the last topics I will talk about is the Philadelphia Phillies bring back Realmuto and Gregorius. Will it be enough? Maybe. They've done things to fix their bullpen this offseason. If their bullpen can improve, then this Phillies team does have a shot maybe at that division. I'm just so low on the Phillies because every year that they try, something goes wrong. They acquired Archie Bradley and Jose Alvarado. Alvarado came from Tampa. Archie Bradley came through free agency and makes their bullpen average. Realmuto is the best catcher in the league. It was heavily predicted that he was going to come back to Philadelphia. Didi Gregorius is a solid shortstop. They get both those players back. It's going to be important for them. These guys were important to re-sign, and they did do that, which is good. And it's good for the Philadelphia Phillies that they did this, but will it be enough? They still have to fix up their starting pitching. There's a lot of holes, and I believe that the Phillies are still going to make moves to fill up those holes, but I don't think they're going to be long-term big-name fits, and I don't think it's going to be that good for the Phillies. So does this change their situation so much? In my opinion, no. It doesn't change their situation so much. Does it make them better? Absolutely, it makes them better. Does it make them good enough to compete? I don't think so. So these are good signings, and they're needed signings, but the Phillies need to do more. Moving right along, we're going to talk about the Indians one more time, then we'll talk about the big thing that went down recently, and we will close out this episode of World of Baseball. Moving right along, the Cleveland Indians added outfielder Eddie Rosario. Rosario killed the Cleveland Indians in the past couple years. Absolutely killed them. I believe Max Kepler was the only guy on the Twins who raked more against the Indians. The Twins have killed the Indians for years now. It's been so awful to watch. Just so hard to watch. Eddie Rosario, every time I saw the Indians playing and he was up, I was just worried. He'd like rope a double down the line or crush a home run. The last Indians outfielder to hit 32 home runs was Grady Sizemore. I forget when he did it. Eddie Rosario hit 32 in 2019. He had a bad 2020. We'll see if he can bounce back. The Indians needed to do something about their outfield, and they got the one guy that kills them all the time, and maybe he'll be able to help the Indians out. I'm a fan of this signing. I didn't expect him to go and get anyone huge like George Springer or Marcell Ozuna or anything like that, guys who can help out in the outfield on a large scale, but he can help out on a decent scale, and if he plays the way he played 2 years ago, I believe it's a solid signing for the Indians. I'm a fan of this signing, too. I think the Indians make good moves. That's not the reason I'm a fan of them, but I do think their management is relatively smart. Moving right along to the last thing I'd like to talk about, Nolan Arenado to the St. Louis Cardinals in exchange for like $50 million of cash. We all saw Arenado moving. I thought it was going to be to the New York Mets. I didn't thought it was potentially going to be to the New York Yankees somehow. It's always a chance that it's going to go to the New York Yankees. But he went to the St. Louis Cardinals. Matt Carpenter's time at third base is officially over. I'm a big fan of Matt Carpenter. I thought he played tremendously well a couple years ago, but he has been on a downward spiral. I believe he had like a war, I forget what the stat was, but he was below average, and dang it, the stat literally just escaped my brain. But Matt Carpenter had a bad year last year, and he's had some bad years back-to-back-to-back, and Nolan Arenado obviously being one of the best third basemen in the league, if not the best third baseman in the league. His defense alone is enough to start him every day, and his offense definitely doesn't hurt too. Will he be able to hit outside Coors Field? Yes, because he has not had a problem with it at all in his career. This is a fantastic move for the St. Louis Cardinals. Why? Because they jumped on an opportunity. The division is notoriously weak. There's not a single team in their division that has made noticeable strides to compete aggressively for the division. The Brewers are kind of sitting there. The Reds are kind of sitting there. They look to be in better position than all the other teams, but they're kind of sitting there. The Chicago Cubs are also just chilling. They're kind of there. They're kind of not there. You don't know what the Cubs are going to do. They might either like just sign a couple more players, or they might blow it up this year. Trade Chris Bryant. Maybe Chris Bryant will go to the Mets. That'd be an interesting thing to see. They might blow it up. We don't know what's going to happen with the Chicago Cubs. And the Cardinals see that. And they're sitting and they're waiting and they're waiting. And all of a sudden, boom, there's an opportunity to win the division. Let's get a good player. Let's win the division. I love that. Now they have Paul Goldschmidt, who's an elite defensive first baseman, and Nolan Arenado, who's an elite defensive third baseman on the corners of their infield. They're a strong team, and this just looks good for them. This looks really good for the St. Louis Cardinals. Their fans should be excited on getting a player of this caliber. I'd definitely be excited if I was them. And this is just a great move. And I believe now it's more than 100% certain that they'll win the NL Central because of this deal alone. Will they win the World Series? Are they a contender for the World Series? I don't know. Depends on what they do for the rest of the offseason. When I come out with my predictions, I'll say more on that. And that is all I got for this episode of World of Baseball. That was episode 55. Thank you guys so much for listening to the show. Remember to follow the World of Baseball podcast on Twitter. You can email the podcast at worldofbaseballpodcast@gmail.com if you have any comments, concerns, questions, advice, whatever you want. If you just want to chat baseball, feel free to do that. Thank you guys so much for listening to episode 55 of the show. This is Vince Gisser signing out. If you like what you're hearing from the World of Baseball podcast, please consider supporting. The link is in the podcast description. Thank you so much and have a good day.